Everybody, can you hear my voice?
Yes, a little loud, Sam.
Ah, tough shit, you got no choice. So grab a glass and sit back in your chair, 'cause Uncorked is going live to air.
Here is another episode of Uncorked Whiskey Sessions with me, Boutique Dave, and him...
me, Dr. Whiskey.
There you go. Hi, Sam.
Dave, you
it's
just...
Another episode. We haven't been far from each other all day.
You're sick of my shit already. There was a huge sigh when you said hi, Sam, so I won't take it personal. Have you been having an okay day? Do you need
I
a hug?
On purpose. Come on.
I know. It's adorable. But how are you? Is everything okay?
No. Everything's not okay.
How can we help?
I'm cooped up into this little tiny office.
I figure, yeah, if someone's listening to this, they can probably relate to that dark scenario. But let's shine a little light into that scenario and bring in some guests.
Let's do that indeed. So who have we got on today? Well, we've got Scott Adamson from Tomatin Distillery. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
Ah, damn it. Who's going to say hello, Scott?
I heard Angus doing it the other day, and I thought that's a little bit played out now. I don't want to be that guy.
So. Wait, are you one of the seven people who listen to this podcast?
I'm one of the people that listen to it seven times.
That's what's going on. Skewing our stats.
Yeah.
And we've also got the adorable Becky Paskin on the show today as well, which is great because we spent Friday evening with Becky on Whiskey Casks podcast happy hour as well, didn't we?
That was Friday. What day is it now?
It's yesterday. I'm pretty sure it's yesterday.
I knew that was a Friday, Becky. How are you?
Great. Good. Excited to finally be on the show. I am one of the seven listeners. I'm such a big fan of Anadrams.
I could see that enthusiasm when we played the other night at. Mark's show on Friday evening on Happy Hour, you were straight in there and quicker than I could read them out, I think.
not quite. I think, you know, it's quite funny because I tried to keep my competitiveness under wraps, but the amount of people who messaged me after that show and were like, wow, I have never seen you say that side of you before.
Yeah, we loved it. I didn't think, at the time, I don't think Mark knew what was going on, but...
having Boutique Dave come on and hijack his show with a brilliant game of Anadrams.
We had the sense to leave it till 1 second after 1 hour. We had been on for an hour and Dave took over. Becky and Scott, so why don't we? There's a lot I want to talk to you about. There's not a ton of time because it's almost dinner time and things are crazy with this lockdown. We are in a weird situation. But before we get into that. Who are you and why do we know each other?
So I'm Scott Adamson. I'm the global brand ambassador for Tomatin Distillery. I've been doing that for a couple of years, worked at the company in a commercial role before that. So I know Dave from various festivals around Europe most recently. But Sam, I'm not sure if you'll remember this, but I met you back in 2013 and it was actually the very first whiskey festival that I went to. And the couple of hours that I spent with you actually were a couple of moments that made me think this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So
if this asshole can do it.
I was 22 at the time. And my first trip for Tomatin was to New York. So I'd spent 2 weeks in New York. And then that finished up with New York Whiskey Festival. And I met a couple of the guys from Balvenie. I think it was Wingo and is it David Laird?
Yeah,
is that
you're
his
right.
name?
Yep.
Yeah, so I bumped into those guys and they invited me to the Balvenie after party in the meatpacking district where it was the Balvenie craft showcase. And I think you were playing in the band at the time with Kat and that. And anyway, afterwards, I'd been speaking to those guys and they'd been sharing some samples and they said, well, now that this is done, do you want to go and share a couple of drams? There's an Irish bar not too far away. We're going to head there. So we all wait outside And you came to me and said, just get any car possible. And I was expecting that you were asking for a taxi. And I said, oh, well, there's a limo. And you said, grab it. So I'm 22 years old, and we're cruising through Manhattan in a limo, going from an after party to an after party. And I was like, you know what? If this is what I have to do for a living, I think I'm okay with that. So, and I think that's the only time I've met you before now as well.
Yeah, no, that was a memorable night, even the parts I can't remember. And if that inspired you to get into this line of work, may the narrative arc that ends in the four of us on a Zoom call recording a podcast for Boutique-y give you a bit of fear. No, that's nice, man. That doesn't feel that long ago. I don't know how it feels to you. Yeah, okay.
It doesn't. No. And it's only now that I'm going back and going, oh, man, I was 22 at the time. That's insane. That's how far back it was.
It says something about lockdown that Monday feels further away than that does somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. It feels a little bit like that week between Christmas and New Year for the last month, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just, Scott, just to tie it up on that. So globally, Tomatin is everywhere, or what's because Tomatin to many people, I think, is still new.
Yeah, I think it's amazing because I think for a lot of people it is still new. But when you actually look at some of the numbers and look at some of the data, we're doing all right. We're in, I would say, probably the better part of 70 markets worldwide. We're a top 15 brand in Asia, top 5 in Japan, top 10 in the States. So to throw some numbers at it. But yeah, I think it still feels like a small brand, which is quite good because we get to go and do all these incredible events that bigger brands get to do, but also we still have that feel of a smaller company from the Highlands of Scotland that are still based at the distillery and being able to take part in having that more face-to-face interaction with consumers.
Yeah, so that sense of discovery, even though you are actually distributed, you are actually a major player, that feeling when someone finds it still feels a bit special, which is a cool position to be in, I think, in the world of single malt Scotch whiskey. Yeah. Cool. Becky, hi.
Hi.
Why do you love whiskey? How'd you get here?
I actually started out I started out as a bartender. That dirty word. And then
were you a mixologist or were you a bartender?
Hell no, I was doing pints.
Okay.
I was doing pints and making rum and cokes and calling them Cuba Libras. And charging twice the price for it.
Nice. Okay.
You know, I can still make a killer Cosmo because at that time Cosmos were one of the most popular cocktails. So we're talking a while ago now. So I was a bartender, but I trained to be a journalist with this grand idea that I would review films, but that didn't happen. So I kind of landed a job. The first one I got actually was writing about the hospitality industry for a website called Big Hospitality. So I joined that right at the start of its life. And I was with them. So they're kind of a sister title to Restaurant Magazine, which runs the world's 50 Best Restaurant Awards, which I think a lot of people have probably heard of. So I started out as a journalist writing about food and then navigated into spirits, and that's when I discovered whiskey and fell in love with whiskey. And quite honestly, I didn't really drink it before I started writing about it, but I was asked this the other day actually what it was about whiskey that made me fall in love with it, and it's
what was it about whiskey that made you fall in love with it?
I think the day, Sam, you get in your old age, you're repeating yourself. it's the people in stories, isn't it? Come on, I mean, you're a writer, Sam, you know this as well, and Dave, both of you are whiskey writers yourself, so it's having such a wonderful number of amazing, enchanting, romantic stories to be able to tell. It's a treasure trove of tales of people working in whiskey, of people making whiskey, and whiskey itself is magical and enchanting. So everything sort of comes together, and the whiskey itself is, I mean, it's brilliant. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, fucking yes. Do it.
If you don't, you're not off.
It's fucking fantastic. Whiskey is fantastic. Of course. Yeah, had to write about whiskey. And when Sukhinder approached me and said, hey, can you come and help run scotchwhiskey.com, which I'm about to launch, I was like, yeah, down tools, straight over to Park Royal, and scotchwhiskey.com was born. And now it's dead.
Well, there is a life cycle in the world of whiskey. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are ups and downs, and things change. And I know. So we didn't get Scott, when you were working in sales, but did you love whiskey? You do now, I guess. To be an advocate, to be an ambassador, you have to actually have that contagious bug. Did you have it then?
Yeah. So I mean, I didn't even get into Tomatin through sales. So to go back to Becky's point, it's all about the people. And so my background is I studied Scottish history at university, and in between the third and fourth year, I had been working in warehouses in my summers off, and I decided it was probably better to do something relating to history, because I think a lot of history degrees end up in jobs nothing to do with it. So I came across an advert from Tomatin looking for someone to research the distillery's history for a two-month internship. Applied for that job, got that job. Went back to university for a year. So I was working at Tomatin part-time for that year, in the still house and in marketing and things like that. So got to see all kind of aspects of the business. And as I was in my final year of university, I started attending tastings. And I think what it was once I got my foot in the door at Tomatin and I could actually see, so I'm very lucky that I grew up in the middle of the Highlands of Scotland. Dalmore Distillery is a 5-minute walk from my front door. But I think that always, growing up, made me take distilleries and whiskey for granted. So it wasn't until I actually started working at Tomatin that I could see the craft, the passion, the history that goes into it, that this is something that me, as a historian, as a history student, I could get really excited about. So by the time that I did actually start working at Tomatin full-time, about 6 months later, I had already, the whiskey bug had bitten me. So although my role was, I was actually the European sales manager for the better part of 6 years. A big part of my job, because we are still a small company, was going to shows and doing the ambassadorial work. So yeah, no, I think I've probably been a whiskey geek since probably 2013 now.
Well, enjoy your hairline while you have it.
On that note, I made the terrible decision to do a quarantine haircut the other day. And I look a little bit like Sean from This Is England.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I decided that my fringe was no longer required. And I think that was the worst choice I could have made for my marriage.
Yeah, not the warmest look to go for. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Dave, you're sticking your nose in a glass, and maybe we should all have something. I know if we were in the same room, guys, we'd pour you something now. And I look forward to having that opportunity again to be in the same space and everything. But until then, what are you having, Dave?
Well, I've grabbed a single grain from Loch Lomond. It's our batch 4. It's a 21-year-old. It is absolutely delicious.
I only put a little bit more in. That sound gets the kids running, brings all the boys to the yard. Next week is supposed to be Spirit of Speyside Whiskey Festival. I know we had a lot planned. I'm sure you did too. Scott and Becky probably as well. Becky, you're doing something with the festival sort of in lieu of this whiskey festival season, aren't you?
Yeah. So actually it kicks off next week. So it didn't necessarily mean it to coincide with Spirit of Speyside, but that's just the way it's landed. So actually something I didn't mention that I'm doing now is, so I co-founded something called Our Whiskey a couple of years ago with Georgie Bell, who's the global malts ambassador for Bacardi. So she looks after Aberfeldy, Royal Bracknell, Altmore. So Our Whiskey was designed to be a movement to try and challenge this perception that whiskey is a man's drink. So we're trying to change people's perceptions of who whiskey drinkers actually are, because apologies to the two bearded white guys I'm speaking to. Scott, you get off those. We had a shave this morning.
Yeah. Well, we're deaf, gay, and Jewish.
the perception obviously is that only white bearded men drink whiskey, and as we know, working in the industry, that's just not true. So George and I founded Our Whiskey as a movement to try and challenge that perception, to try and encourage people to see past traditional marketing and to realise that actually whiskey is something that anybody can drink. Because too often, as a woman, I doubt you guys have come across this yourselves, but whenever I buy a whiskey or I tell somebody what I do, there's quite often the response of, oh, but that's a man's drink, isn't it? Or, but you don't actually like it, do you? And the perception is there, and we get told this time and time again, and it's frustrating. And I know a lot of women who work in whiskey and a lot of women who drink whiskey come up against this all of the time. And things are starting to change, but at a slow rate. So launched Our Whiskey a couple of years ago, and now it's starting to move into its new phase. So I've got some exciting news which is coming, but for now we decided, with everything that's happening at the moment and this, you know, we all love a whiskey festival. We all love connecting with our friends and meeting new people and sharing new whiskies and running around a whiskey festival floor with a glass and meeting someone and being like, oh my God, you have got to try this. And just sharing that love and passion for whiskey that you have. And I kind of felt really sad that we wouldn't be having that opportunity for quite a while. So we decided to launch the Our Whiskey Virtual Whiskey Festival, which launches on the 30th of April and will run every Thursday for 4 weeks. And with that, we are sending out packs of 5 whiskies to anyone who buys a ticket, so £30 for a ticket. And when you log in at 6 p.m. on any of those dates, you'll end up confronted by a panel of whiskey makers. So the people who've actually made the whiskey, who will be able to talk you through the drams that you're having. So we're creating a nice community atmosphere, bringing everybody together so we can discuss what whiskies are in the glass in front of us, taste them, discover new whiskies, hopefully new favourites, and just bring people together. The best part of the whole thing is that all of the profits will be going to charity, so that everything will be going to the Drinks Trust, which is a charity which helps people in the hospitality industry who've fallen on hard times or who have obviously been affected by what's been happening at the moment.
So such a cool thing. Our whiskey to begin with, sadly necessary, and probably more than addressing consumers, it's addressing the big companies to remind them to start speaking to a wider audience, because it's them who propagate that myth, I would argue. And it's a shame. Yeah, Dave, Scott, we see it all the time. You stand in a whiskey stand as an ambassador for Balvenie for years. You stand in a whiskey stand next to a colleague who knows more about a specific whiskey than you do. And the men and women who come to the stand speak to you only. Hmm. You know, so something like Our Whiskey is needed. So, but and on the festival front, it's pretty impressive how quickly you've pulled this together. How did you do that?
With a lot of tears. a lot of stress. And look, it's not easy doing something like this. And I guess the conversation started before lockdown happened, actually. So I'm going to shout out, because you know the logistics of putting together a whiskey festival where you're sending out tasting packs is not easy at the moment, because bottling halls have had to close down. So getting samples bottled is a miraculous feat. So I have to say a massive thank you to my partners on this. So Claxton's, based in Dumfries, they are bottling all of the samples for free. They are not charging anything. So wow. They are donating their time to do it. And also Chris Burrows from the Dram team, who has also donated all of the bottles themselves, as in the sample sizes, to the cause. And he's donated all of that and a lot of his time as well to help me get all of the logistics together to get this festival done. Actually, all the samples are about to arrive on my doorstep this week in Brighton. All the samples will be arriving with me. And it's a labour of love. I'll be putting all of those boxes together myself. And I live on my own, so it's just me and the cat boxing them together. So it's a really big undertaking to put a festival together, especially when it's not something that you do normally.
Yeah, right? Well, go buy a ticket, people. $30, right? £30.
£30 per ticket. So you've got the 30th of April, 7th of May, 14th of May, and 21st of May. You don't know what the whiskies are. You don't know the people who are going to be presenting them, but I've ensured it's an amazing lineup. So if you buy a ticket, you're not going to be disappointed. And it's all for a really good cause as well.
Well, as fast as you pulled it together, Becky, and Scott, Tomatin already, you know, beat to the punch in a way, and it's different in a different level. But like, you guys pulled something together so quickly and so effectively. How did that come about?
Yeah, I think we got off out the blocks pretty quick, and it is. I mean, there's a lot of downsides of having a smaller team, but there's a lot of benefits as well. So I think it was around about the 8th or 9th of March. I was in Copenhagen and I got a message sent through to say, when you get back, you're going to be working from home. So already before that kind of 14th of March weekend, I was starting to think a little bit along the lines of, what's a brand ambassador going to do working from home for a while? I didn't want to be standing outside with like a trench coat with brand ambassador activities for sale, you know? So I started to have a little think about what we could do. And then that first week of our lockdown from Tomatin, I got in touch with our marketing team and said, right, here's some ideas. And they very much threw out this idea of a brand ambassador takeover of social media. And it originally started as something for me to do. So every Tuesday on Instagram Live, I'll do a sort of peek behind the curtain into the whiskey industry and a deep dive into a Tomatin product. And then on Fridays, we're doing what we're calling the softer side sessions on YouTube and Facebook. And it's basically me hanging about with another whiskey geek talking about a certain subject. So this I don't know when this is going out, but people can watch back on YouTube. But this Friday is really cool. Myself, Andy Bell from Isle of Arran Distillers, Ian Fertith from Angus Dundee, and Peter Mackay, who, because of furlough, I'm not allowed to say what distillery he works for, but he is also the host of the Peter Mackay Motorsport podcast. We're going to be doing a session talking about sherry wine. We're all big fans of sherry itself, so we're going to be doing an hour of just talking about our passion for that. And that kind of goes back to what Becky was saying earlier on, that people get interested in something by stories and passion, not about fermentation lengths and Solera systems. So we're just going to be talking about that in a very passionate way. Anyway, this all started forming, and the feedback that we were getting from people watching was incredible, and it went beyond this being something for me to do and into people really want this. What are they really going to be missing out over the next couple of weeks? And it was whiskey festivals. I had to cancel trips to China, to Limburg, to Nuremberg, all these great, great shows. And you guys all know as well that whiskey festivals are all about coming together over a shared love of whiskey. But that's not just from a consumer level. That's also behind the stands.
Yeah, yeah.
You get to go and meet your mates for a weekend and share some whiskeys and then go and have a drink afterwards and stuff like that. So because of that, I'm very fortunate enough to have a long list of people that I knew that if I called them, they'd be up for doing something. And we just thought of this idea. And it was the Wednesday afternoon. I got in touch with our marketing team and said, how would you like to do a virtual whiskey festival? And I'd already run the idea past Roy Duff, who is the runner of Aqua Vitae over on YouTube, and he was well up for it as well. So by the Friday afternoon, we had 12 brands committed to it and everything signed up, and it was within 48 hours we were able to announce that the show was going to be going live. And we could have had so many more brands. Only constraint was time. We planned a 3-hour show and it ended up running over 4 hours because we had 12 brands. And again, the whole thing about that was about getting as many people together at a festival as possible. And on the day, we had 10,000 viewers. Since then, we've had over 25,000 views of the streams. And it was fantastic because nothing's going to replace a real whiskey festival. Nothing's going to replace being able to walk around a show with your mates and speak to a producer. But there was actually some benefits to the whole online thing as well. You know, you didn't have to wait in a queue outside in the rain, which was lovely. You could eat your own food rather than dusty old cracker. But I think what was really good was we set this up as a almost a case of, you're going to be missing out on whiskey festivals, come to this one. But there were so many people around the world that either because of geography or because of work commitments can never go to whiskey festivals. And they were able to take part in this. And it's going to be there forever on YouTube for people to tune in and see. So just a great, great event.
Well, that brings me to a question that probably for both you, and it's related to the Our Whiskey idea. I wonder if there's some equalizer in it being online. I wonder that if someone would feel intimidated to go to a show. Maybe people don't come to shows, not just because of their gender or sex or race, racial background or ethnic background, but because they just don't feel like a whiskey show is somewhere they want to be. You know, they feel outcast or there's a stereotype that it would come with it. Got a bunch of guys like us walking around with a lanyard going, oh, well, the fermentation time changed in 1968. Oh, go fuck yourself. I'm not going there. But suddenly these things are online and we might see a totally new, the real representation, Becky, of what the demographic of home consumption, of people who actually love whiskey, but don't dare be part of the whiskey world because of all those borrowed old traits.
I think to a certain extent, that's right. You just need to see the popularity of women whiskey groups around the world. So I know Mulroy's of Soho in London, they do a women in whiskey evening. So it's only women that go along to that. Men are invited, of course, but it's marketed to women. And that's extremely popular every week. People go back and back and back because they enjoy it. They feel safe and it's easy for them to discover whiskey. I mean, I'm not saying that the men haven't experienced this either, but whenever I'm presenting a class at a whiskey festival, or even if I'm stood on a stage in the middle of a whiskey festival hosting a discussion with a big personality, I will always be asked a question that's designed to trip me up by someone sat in the front row, a guy normally. Or to tell me that I don't know the answer to something or that I got something wrong, I think you'll find. And I'm not sure whether, I don't think I've seen that with any male hosts or male presenters. It just seems to be something that some male whiskey drinkers like to do to show that they know what they're talking about. And I wonder whether it's, you know, is that kind of behavior that puts off a lot of women going into that situation of being surrounded by other whiskey geeks at a show, because there's that mentality of, hey, I know way more than you do. At least I think I do. And I need to show it. It's peacocking. It's basically peacocking.
Yeah. But that peacocking, I think we can all say that peacocking happens anyway. I mean, I know when I started with whiskey with this accent, people peacock the shit out of me because like, what could you possibly know? I had people walk out of tastings when I started working with the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society because they wanted a real Scotch teacher, ambassador. And not to minimize the situation you just outlined there, but that maybe that is a cultural obstacle here, is that there's something about this insular community of whiskey lovers where we are trying to one up one another, or we are trying to be like, well, I know more. Does whiskey foster snobbery by default?
Do you think it's global as well? I mean, because when you go to certain countries, certainly in Asia, I don't see that. Very, very knowledgeable crowd. In Asia, and it's very, very equally mixed and young, and there's no old grey bearded men telling me.
Very respectful in Asia as well. I mean, I'm not an ambassador, so I haven't been to Asia to teach or been to the shows over there. But I've heard those stories as well, Dave. That it's very mixed audience. There are a lot of women who are very, very interested in whiskey and have a hell of a lot of knowledge about it, and there's a lot of respect as well. So even if you are a woman in whiskey, you're not poo-pooed or pushed to the side because there's the perception you don't know any better. Why is that, do you think? Why is that, Elijah?
Again, I think it's probably the respect. And I think probably a lot of the time when it comes to ambassadors, it's the respect of how far these ambassadors have traveled to go and speak to you, that if they've been paid to travel halfway around the world to speak to you, they must know something. Whereas maybe that's not as well received elsewhere. But I think back to what you were saying, Sam, the point about does whiskey foster snobbery, I think that can be the case, but I think that's led by brands and by ambassadors. I think if an ambassador stands up and says, this is what we do and this makes us better, it's this continual one-upmanship. And that trickles down to the drinkers. Whereas what I'm seeing more and more often now, and I'm glad to be seeing it, is this is what we do. It doesn't make us better. It just makes us different. And that's why we do it. And I'm glad to see that, as you said, Becky, earlier on, it is happening slowly, but there is a move towards more welcomeness in whiskey. And I think back to what you were saying originally, Sam, what I find great about the festival that we run was that, so there's a level of, I guess, enthusiasm turns into connoisseurship, and you tend to be in that 1% of whiskey drinkers that actually go to a whiskey festival. But what was great for me was seeing the amount of people that will sit at home with a dram and a rocks glass, love whiskey, but would never ever consider going and learning about it. But because this was on YouTube, they would tune in. So a great one that I had was my history teacher from secondary school left a comment. And this was the guy that got me into history and by effect led to me having a job in the whiskey industry. And he left a comment saying, incredible, the pupil has become the teacher. And he would never go to a whiskey festival. He would never buy a Glencairn glass, you know. But he loves whiskey.
Me neither.
Because of what we're doing now, there you go. Because of the sort of things that we're doing now, he was able to engage in whiskey on a deeper level than maybe ever before. So I think there's going to be a lot of positivity coming around the activity that we're able to do right now.
What was in your glass there, Scott?
Well, I wasn't sure what the script was today. I didn't know if it was going to be a let's nose and taste or a let's just have a casual drink. So in my casual drink glass, I've got a Tomatin Legacy, summer day, you can't ask for better. But in my Glencairn, I've got a small single cask bottling that we did for the malt room in Inverness. It's a Montiado sherry butt, only 60 bottles. It's the only Tomatin product that I've ever paid full price for because the bartender never knew that I worked at Tomatin when I went in and asked for the bottle, so I'll not hold that against them. It's a lovely, lovely whiskey.
Yeah.
Even though I hand bottled every bottle myself.
What time is it?
What was in your glass before Sam tells me what time it is? What was in your glass, Becky? Were you drinking?
In mine. So this, I'm drinking a. It's a Chivas Regal 13-year-old, the one finished in American Rye. I think this is the Man United one. It's actually, do you know, it's pretty good. It's a really easy drinker. I've had this on ice quite a lot, but I've just put it with some ginger ale and like tons of ice because it's such a hot day. It's delicious, actually. I tried some of the ginger beer first and then obviously with the whiskey in it, and it just brings it to life. It's like a lovely, like more fruity with like just a touch of spice to it. So yeah, it's really lovely.
Thanks for saying that. Cause there is, I mean, people, you almost have to apologize when you in a certain circle say that you've put a mixer with your whiskey. You can still appreciate a whiskey with fizzy drinks. Thank you very much.
Well, actually inspired by the series that you were doing on Instagram about what home mixers do you have to put in your whiskey and what works. I was thinking about this earlier. Because I really wanted a long drink, but I can't find any tonic water in the shops for a gin and tonic because everybody's panic buying tonic water.
Yeah.
So, what do I have at home? So obviously I've got a lot of whiskey to choose from, but the mixer I have, aside from ginger ale, is Dr. Pepper. What would you? My question is, what goes with Dr. Pepper?
Well, I mean, that Amontillado, I think something big, Highlandy and nutty, personally. I think Tomatin's probably a pretty good bet. You guys, what do you think?
Dr. Pepper's cherry sort of flavored, right?
Yeah.
I think you're probably onto something there, Sam. Something big, nutty, chocolatey would work. Maybe something smoky as well.
I was thinking maybe Ardbeg Ugadal would be a good one.
Well, I did some Ironbury. I put some 25-year-old Isla with Ironbury. That worked out okay. Yeah. So, I did that at a whiskey festival just to upset a few people.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't do it. Watch me.
Yeah.
Watch me. I can. Yeah, and it was pretty good, actually. I don't drink fizzy drinks. Anyway, I know you're only here for the game, so I'm going to drag the game up now and share my screen. You'll not see me, but you should see my screen. So hopefully everything will go to plan.
So we've gone visual in the digital age in the lockdown era. So if you are just listening at home, you will not be able to see what we're talking about. And so you might as well pull over and try to imagine it. Drawing yourself. So if we can, guys, let's describe whatever we're seeing. We'll say the words clearly and give everyone a chance at home to play along.
Yeah. It's not sharing at the moment. Everything. Well, let me just what's going on? The screen's gonna die. Am I gonna get thrown out of here?
Becky rigged it. We were on Mark Gillespie's OG Whiskey Cast a Friday night and she aced Anadrams.
I think I got two right.
Well, that's a pretty good score.
The screen not sharing might be the best possible thing that could happen for me.
Oh, really? Okay. Letters, you're a historian, but not... Okay.
Yeah. Give me a date and it'll be perfect.
This.
So, welcome to Anadrams. Dave will be back. I'd really like him to host, but we have learned how to play the countdown music on various instruments, so I might as well do that for you while we are waiting. So, give me a sec.
On every instrument.
No, not really. Didn't really work.
Beautiful.
What else we got here? Oh yeah, do do do. Oh, wait. Just like rehearsal.
If I'd have known, I would have busted it out on the piano, Sam.
We should have given you a heads up. Yes, we will do that. We will get you to record it for us so the next time we play Anadrams, it can be a Becky Paskin a ridge. Come on, Dave. I miss you, buddy. Nope, nothing. Well, you can guess what happens here. We are going to have a word, a letter jumble, I suppose. I think this has to do with English distilleries, just to fuck you all up.
English?
I think. Oh, what do I know? I can't remember breakfast. And like you said,
there
Becky.
Now. There are 30 English distilleries, apparently. I'm not going to be good at this.
So we're going to be playing Anadrams. It is...
Dave, if you press present, you can see the answers in the left, buddy.
Yeah. I was hoping you weren't going to say that. That was the best chance that I had.
I was presenting. Bam.
So, guys, do us a favor. You guys saw, I guess the contestants, our lovely guests, have seen some of the answers, but give the people at home a chance to play. But if you're seeing this in video, you don't really have a fucking chance anyway. Oh, God. Nailing it.
Time for some wee Anadrams. Can you guess the Scottish distiller? Right, here we go. Question number one is Leo Rises. I'll start the clock.
Leo Rises. Great. Wonder if it's a new distillery. It looks like it might be a big one. I think it's up on the coast near Forest.
Oh, Cork, somebody just put me out of my misery.
Go back.
Do I just shout it out?
Yep.
Yeah.
Rose Isle.
What's indeed? Oh, we messed this up. Good time. Everybody.
Is that a pork pie on a stem?
Yeah, that's what it is, a pork pie.
Oh, God. That looks delicious.
That is Valentine's Day that I want to go to.
Okay, number two. Here we go. You didn't see this one, surely.
Didn't.
Swing Levy is what it says.
Swing Levy. SWINGLEVY if you're playing online.
Oh, Scott, you pulled the cork.
I have. This is a distillery very close to where I live. And a good friend of mine works there. It's Glenlivet.
It certainly is, sir. Well done. It is Glenlivet. Well done indeed.
So these are new Scottish distilleries. What's Glenlivet all about? Do you know anything about it, Dave or Scott?
Yeah, I've been there, luckily enough. So Glenlivet was set up by a farmer through in Dingwall, taking its name from a couple of local distilleries, obviously the old Benlivet distillery. And Glen Skiach, which was in Eventon in the 1920s. And they crowdfunded pretty much the whole distillery, but they did it in a way that is community owned. So I believe it is the first community-owned distillery in Scotland.
Is it 100% organic?
I don't know if it is, but they do have alpacas, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, organic things. Yeah, I hear that's one of the prerequisites for getting organic status. You must have alpacas on site. Or other organic things.
Oh my God, okay. The neighbor's outside my window. I'm here talking to you guys. I got bottles everywhere. He probably thinks this guy has a problem.
We've all had those moments, yeah. Alias, foray. And we're off.
Okay, aliases, foray. Foray. Jeez Louise, great little graphic here. Aliases, foray. What new Scottish distillery? Scott's got it!
Rassé. Isle of Rassé.
It certainly is. It definitely looks like Isle of Rassé to me.
And?
Yes.
So it is. Well done.
So yeah, that's R&B Distillers. Founded in 2017. Over on the little Isle of Rassé, just to the... Is it just to the north in that little bay on Isle of Skye? It's really pretty over there. He certainly posts some fabulous pictures.
Mm.
Their inaugural bottling was just announced the other day.
Yeah.
Are they going bonkers pricey, or what's the approach?
I think it's around about the £90 mark.
That's very fair. That's cool.
I was fortunate enough a couple of weeks ago to go on a little live tasting with them, and they sent out a sample of the component parts, and it's really, really nice stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. There's all another right, next one here. It's Snags Brink.
Snags Brink. SNAGSBRINK. The music begins, and Becky looks puzzled, but kind of like she saw it in the side earlier. And is just being polite and waiting. Scott's waiting for it. He might have to pull the cork. His hand is separate from the cork. It's not even near it. I'm struggling with this too. What the hell? Snags Brink. Oh shit, we're running out of time. Oh man, I don't think anyone
can. Bank, right?
Oh. King Barnes, of course. Over in Fife.
Nice, yeah, it's just across the beautiful bridges, isn't it? It's right across the bridge. You can get up over to Fife and visit King's Barnes if you're in Edinburgh. Do it.
It's very pretty over there, yeah. Right up on the coast. Sars Rod. Is the next one Sars Rod? I'm sure. Yes, we are. I do remember.
Oh, Scott's with the buzzer
again. Just up the hill. That's Ardross.
It is indeed. Yes, it is the Ardross Distillery.
It's just there from me. It's just up there.
Actually, Scott, how are the roads up? I mean, are shipping going in and out? Are the distilleries running? What's going on?
You mean in terms of the current situation?
Yeah.
I think everything's pretty much locked down. As ourselves, we're shut down production until the 23rd of May at the moment. The biggest problem is not so much... I think one of the issues that we're having, and I can't speak for all distilleries, but keeping the social distancing in the warehousing is pretty difficult because you've got guys rolling casks onto lifts and then onto stores.
Of course, yeah.
From a production point of view of making spirit, it's really easy because it's one guy in a mash house, one guy in a still house. That's fine. But it's when you get that spirit into the cask that's difficult. Also, from the established distillery point of view, bottling halls being shut means that there's a bit of a bottleneck going on. From the new guy's point of view, I'm not entirely sure. They might very well be laying down spirit because it's... very often a 1-2-man operation anyway. So good question.
Well, at risk of embarrassing you guys, can I have you predict the future? Because by the time we share this podcast, we probably will know what ended up happening. What's going to happen? You think as whiskey consumers, are we going to feel the impact of this month plus of shutdown?
I don't necessarily, it depends how much longer it goes on for, but I don't think it will necessarily affect liquid supplies too much. I think a lot of distilleries are still, some distilleries are still operating, and the ones who don't have any liquid on shelf yet are still putting it away. So where they can, at least anyway, so where they can do the social distancing, but the ones who have had to shut down, it's, you know, so many distilleries tend to shut down for a couple of weeks a year, at least anyway, to do maintenance. And I think a lot of places are taking advantage of that timing to do their annual maintenance now.
Oh,
so,
that's a good point.
So I don't think it necessarily impacts, but I think what impact there might be is that obviously people are right now going towards navigating towards comfort brands. So their go-to whiskey, whatever that might be, whether it's a more affordable product, a more affordable brand, and they're not necessarily exploring at this time and going for maybe independent products or scaling up or premiumizing. Everybody's obviously nervous about how much money they have. So I think a issue which may arise from this is that smaller distillers who, or smaller brands, which maybe aren't classed as being those comfort brands, might start to struggle, and we might see some fall off as a result of that. But I think in terms of shutdown, I don't think there's going to be a huge effect
on the market. I mean, even in terms of the bottling halls being locked down, a lot of brands still have stock on the floor ready to ship out. So we've been able to fulfill orders when they've come in. I think my point, similar to Becky's, is that even once lockdown's lifted, so for us, we work a 4.5-day week. So we just have to work 5 or 6 days and we'll get back on track from the production point of view. My worry is more along the lines of how people go about enjoying whiskey. You know, how quickly will people really want to go back to bars? Will we have the whiskey festival season at the end of the year? I personally don't know when our company will lift their travel bans. So I think that sort of thing is probably going to have the longer impact. I think it'll be probably into next year before people are comfortable to go to a whiskey bar or festival or tasting again.
Yeah, and looping it all the way back around to what we started discussing with whiskey festivals, I think what people like Scott and Martin are doing with creating a festival, and what our whiskey is doing, and all the others that are out there who are doing tasting packs, it's aiding discovery. So if you are, obviously you're listening to this podcast, so you're a whiskey lover, but if you want to explore whiskey and try something new, try something different, there are so many options available now to do that. So in lieu of going to your favourite whiskey bar or going to your favourite whiskey festival, because we're heading into that season now, try and find something online that you know you can get whiskies sent to you, so you can still try. I would ask that everybody try something new at least once during this lockdown. Just expand your mind, explore options, taste that no age statement whiskey, and taste whiskey from a different country. Don't just stick with what you know. Now's a great time to explore and expand and support an industry that still needs you, really.
Awesome. Sorry to sidetrack you, Dave. I know you're a very dedicated host and you've been doing a great job.
I'm going to get one right. I'm so bad today. Do you know what? It's Sam talking over it. It's putting me off. That's what it is.
Okay, are we ready for the next one? It is human canard.
I won't speak over this one. I will just stand over here. Human canard. Oh, Scott has uncorked.
I want to let you know.
Oh no, I don't.
I am not very competitive, but I'm surprising myself today. Is that Ardna Merchan?
Man,
absolutely.
Well played. Well played, sir.
Well done.
Hot toddy, everyone.
I got that a couple of seconds too late. Damn it.
Ardna Merchan, owned by Adelphi Distillery Limited, founded in 2014. Have they got whiskey yet? I mean, I don't know if they produced anything. I'm just having a quick scan quickly.
They've been doing their AD bottlings, the sort of spirit bottlings, and we were lucky enough to have one of the bottles in the office before lockdown. Some of the best spirit I've ever tried, and it's a couple of years old already. Outstanding quality of stuff. But what I saw recently that they did, which was really cool, was a bottling with Kilhoman.
Yeah.
Did you do this at all?
The one, it was for Whiskey Galore in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, something like that. So over at Kilhoman, you've got the Wills family, and at Ardna Merchan and Adelphi, you've got the Bruce family. So it's Bruce Wills, and they tied the names together to be Kilhard.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Sorry. Yeah.
I've not tried it, but I just love the idea of those two companies coming together to do that.
So cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's a great reminder, like the speed at which you put the festival together, and Becky, you too, getting such a warm response from the community, reminds, I hope people listening to this maybe don't fully realize it, the whiskey industry is not a bunch of competitors. There's so many people stepping on the shoulders of each other, and they really do work together, and they're interdependent, interlinked for 100 years, you know, and it's a tradition that still exists. It's still a mentality and philosophy that we see time and again, which is fucking cool about Whiskey World.
Yeah, I think that's something I was always aware of and I've always talked about. But when we run the festival, we really put that to the test, because at a very simple product brand level, we were asking 10 other distilleries and other companies to support our social media initiative that we were doing. And not one person I asked came back and said no. There was a couple of people that couldn't do it because of furlough reasons, but everyone came together. And when you see other distilleries share another distillery's post and things like that, it goes to show that collaboration in whiskey is much more important than competition.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't happen in other industries. I mean, I would challenge, and I don't. If someone can find me an example, use the hashtag Uncork Whiskey Sessions and fucking prove me wrong. But the whiskey industry, exactly right, Scott. That I noticed that too. Glendronic or whoever, different distilleries sharing a Tomatin content. That wouldn't happen, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or I can't think of another example. You know what I mean? It's a special world, the whiskey world.
Awesome. Maybe Dave can tell us more about yacht building. There might be an example of that.
There is a great, there's a great group of guys, and we meet the same people, just like you meet the same people in whiskey festivals. It's the same sort of thing that you meet at boat festivals and yacht festivals. They're called shows more than festivals, but and certainly in the racing world, everyone's very, although they're competitive on the ocean, you know, when they're in the boat, once we're racing, everything's very, very competitive. But immediately afterwards, I mean, it's just like the rugby field. You get off the field and you go and have a beer together.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was always the thing at the end of the whiskey show in London. Anyone who's been to that, certainly all of the distillers at the end of the first session, everyone would just head down to the pub afterwards. It doesn't matter which distillery you're from or who you are. It's, hey, you coming for a drink? Let's go and grab a beer. I mean, at the end of a whole day of drinking whiskey, the last thing you want is a whiskey in a bar, to be honest. But everyone would gather together and go and have a beer. And it's just, it's breaking bread with each other. And that's one of the wonderful things about the whiskey industry, is that it is one massive family, and everyone supports each other. It doesn't matter where in the world you are. It's a global connected whiskey industry.
Amen. So let's support Dave. Let him finish this game and then we can wrap it for today. Thanks so much for being here. All right, let's go.
We've only got two more to go. Don't worry.
We're not worried, but I got to take my kids for a bike ride in 10 minutes. So let's go.
IKEA rib.
Oh God, that sounds fucking delicious. Yes, I love the meatballs. I would go for the ribs. Like if they had like a McDonald's, like a boneless rib back at IKEA, I'd be buying fucking lapsang, whatever the name of these things are. Cool. They're so delicious. Oh, Scott's in.
No, but I'm just chiming in to say IKEA ribs would be lovely, but I think it's our Beaky as well.
It is indeed our Beaky. Well done, yes.
But let's talk more about IKEA ribs, because
it's almost dinner time as we're recording this. So, yeah.
Okay, let's do the last one. I hope there's a last one.
You hope. You're the host. Ty Garbo.
Okay. Garbo.
T-H-A-I Garbo. A new Scottish distillery that sounds like a rice dish.
Again, more points. Pronunciation.
Oh.
Oh. Squeaking coming from Becky.
Torreve.
It is indeed.
Well
yes,
done.
Indeed.
Yeah. Torreve.
Excellent.
Sure, we're saying that wrong too.
Right.
So that is the end of. Yeah, there's the last one. Thank you very much for playing my silly game, and well played.
I'm over the moon. I got one right. I have apparently a reputation to uphold, which I just, which Scott very, very rightly so has taken the crown. Congratulations.
I'm going to have to go and figure out what just happened to my mind for the last sort of half hour, because That's not me. I think you've got a different Scott Adamson today. I'm sorry about that again.
Well, no one likes consistency in whiskey anyway. It's what creates character. And you guys have been right. Awesome guests. Thanks so much for joining us. Yeah. Dave, we have to have them again. This has been, you've both been awesome. These are weird situations, weird times we're living in. I miss you. I want to hug you both big time.
Well, let's get them on our afternoon tea one Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, when we drop this, this episode goes live, we'll let you know and we'll get you on afternoon tea at 2 p.m. We're doing it every weekday on Instagram, the Boutique Whiskey Instagram. And I don't know what else to say. Now it goes back to lonely life with the kids and guilt. Stay close, everybody. We've had Becky Paskin, Scott Adamson. Thanks a lot for being here, guys.
Thanks, guys.
This has been Uncorked. I've been Dr. Whiskey.
And I've been Boutique Dave.
And you still are.
I still am. Hopefully. I can have a look in the label in the back of my shirt. Yeah, I'm still Boutique Dave.
Love you guys. All right, take care.
Hey, everybody, can you hear my voice?
Yes, a little loud, Sam.
Ah, tough shit. You got no choice. Grab a glass and sit back in your chair, 'cause Uncorked is going live.